south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, today we've got some really great emails. Thing is, and why not, people are always asking my advice. And of course, that's reasonable, especially when it's about all things Latin America. But what I don't get is when people ask my advice about things way outside that purview. But hey, I don't dismiss that stuff. I'll give it my best shot. Mine might be a totally twisted opinion, but you know what they say about opinions. They're like assholes. Everybody has one. Then again, my brother's best friend up in Chicago is a colon rectal surgeon who says occasionally, just occasionally, a person's born with two assholes. Which is not all bad because it is a prerequisite for running for Congress. Anyway, first off, we've got an email from Greg. He says, Johnny, I was talking to my Mexican wife, asking her why so many Mexicans go to Chicago when they come to the USA. She says it's probably because they have so many family members living there, which really doesn't answer the question at all. So then why so many Mexican family members living in Chicago? He says, now as for me, I'd say about 80% of the illegal Mexicans I have met or talked to, they wind up in Chicago. Oh, and Johnny, my Mexican wife also told me that the word Chicago in Mexican slang has a meaning I've never heard of. If you haven't heard this, you're going to like it. She says the beginning of the word Chicago, C-H-I, in Mexican Spanish means pee, like to pee your pants. And the cago part of Chicago, the last few letters, turns out in Mexican slang Spanish, the slang word cago means poop or to poop on. So in Mexican Spanish slang, she says the word Chicago means the city of pee and poop, which I thought was awful funny coming from her very Catholic mouth. Just thought I'd share that with you, Johnny. Signed, Greg. Greg, you got me on that one. Nope, I never heard that before. Though I can see how in Spanish you could sort of work that out. Anyway, as for me, born and bred in Chicago, lived there for many years. It still, to this day, surprises me that in all those years, the only Latinos I ever met were Mexicans. And naturally, as a gringo who only met Mexicans, I thought all Latinos were like Mexicans. Well, they're certainly not. And only after I lived in Latin America for a while did I figure that out. Sure, I was born and raised in a pure white-bred neighborhood. You know, Germans, Italians, Irish, Polish. And I never, ever saw a Latino walk through my neighborhood until I personally brought one through. I was in ninth grade and my brand new Mexican buddy, Johnny Gonzalez, he was that first Latino I introduced to my neighborhood. So then how did I hook up with this guy? He was a guy who saw one of my very first rock and roll bands play at a ninth grade social center. He hung around after the gig was over and asked me if I could teach him how to play guitar. Well, we became pretty good friends. He had no talent, though, and played guitar like shit. Though he was very enthusiastic about it. The thing is, he used to come over to my house. I'd give him lessons there. He told me as he strolled on through the neighborhood, he'd always get looks from the neighbors. Hey, if he had walked through my neighborhood and I didn't know who he was, I'd have stared at him myself. Nevertheless, it still amazes me I never met a Latino from any other country but Mexico. Not while I was in Chicago, anyway. I never met anyone from Honduras, Guatemala, Panama, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Argentina. Until I was in my 20s and was able to afford to travel outside the country. Only then did I realize that Latin Americans from different countries have their own peculiarities and differences. Anyway, like I said, back then I had only met Mexicans, so I thought every Latin American, all 20 Latin American countries, were basically just like Mexicans. I was wrong. Of course, these days, it's very different in Chicago. My family and friends tell me up there are Latinos everywhere from all Latin countries. And you know, I get lots of emails with questions asking me, how do I feel about that? Well, I say it's just fine with me, as long as they're educated, speak English, have a skill, and enter legally. Is that too much to ask? Otherwise, kick them out. But that'll never happen because the Democrats need the votes. You know, down here in Latin America, I've met tons of deported Latinos, and every single one of them just loves Biden. Why? because he's the one who's flung those border doors wide open. They know that under his regime, unless you're really stupid or unlucky, it's dead easy to just walk right in. Once you sneak in, you'll never get deported. Everyone here in Latin America knows that. Latinos down here tell me they have no worries at all about what will happen to them once they sneak in the States. What they are very worried about is the cartels they have to deal with on their journey getting there. In fact, the word's out down here in Latin America that once you get to the States and you make it to certain places like New York City, you get all kinds of freebies, starting with free food and free housing in a real gringo quality hotel. And you get a debit card, too, with $500 to $1,000 on it. Oh, and when you hit the border, they give you a free cell phone, too, because you'll have to download an app provided by U.S. Immigration. Oh, and if you make it to California, did you know that you're automatically eligible for Medi-Cal, that's California state, free, full coverage healthcare? Yep, California has opened up the program to illegal aliens, starting with children, 19 to 25-year-olds, followed by adults 50 and older. And just last January, 2 months ago, illegal alien adults between the ages of 26 and 49, they are, as of January, fully eligible for California state health care benefits. The California Medi-Cal plan estimates there are 700,000 illegal aliens now eligible for the program. Isn't that nice? Here's a question for you. You have health insurance, right? Is it free? I don't think so. I bet you have to pay a hefty premium every month, right? Oh, and what's your deductible? You know, at my last Expat Insider seminar just a month or so ago now, attendees were telling me about their insurance programs and complaining about their deductibles. Some had $2,500 a year deductibles, some $5,000, even $10,000. Well, guess what? If you're one of those lucky 700,000 illegal aliens in California, you've got no monthly premium and zero deductible. You know, I just wonder, for example, if I was sitting in a hospital emergency room in California, sitting next to a person who was obviously an illegal alien, telltale signs being, well, there are lots of telltale signs, like the fact that the person has no U.S. ID documents and he can't speak English. I just wonder how I'd feel sitting next to a guy like that, worrying about what my bill could be and my $2,500 or $5,000 or even $10,000 deductible. Meanwhile, the illegal guy sitting next to me has no such worries. Which begs that universal question, how's your plan B coming? And who in the hell would ever want to live in California? You know, we're not done with Greg's email. He's got another question. He says, Johnny, he says, I was wondering if they do dental implants in your neck of the woods, meaning Central America. Is there any chance you might know a good clinic? Then he adds, I wonder if it would pay for me to fly down and get them done. He says, I'd appreciate any thoughts on it. Thanks, Johnny. Okay, Greg, sure. But you know, when you ask a question like that, I know you haven't been listening for too long because I've talked about dentists, dental treatments, implants, braces, et cetera, many times in the past shows. I also spell all that stuff out in my Latin American healthcare report. I talk quite a bit about it in my healthcare segment of my seminars, too. But since you asked, just a little recap here. Down here in Latin America, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, dentistry costs about a quarter to a fifth of what you'd pay for the same thing up in the States. Like, for example, if you needed a crown in Chicago that cost $2,000, down here you could get the very same thing for $300 or $400. Braces, the same. What might cost $5,000 up in the States, a grand to $1,500 here. You'll pay a quarter to a fifth of the price for implants down here compared to the States as well. The thing is, though, dental implants are a fairly recent technology and fairly high tech. Very much specialty work. Sure, just like up in the States down here, an average dentist can do implants. But as for me, if I was getting that kind of work done, I'd go to a specialist, like an oral surgeon. Why? Because in their specialty training, they spend a lot more time doing implants than general dentists do. Now, if you're down in Guatemala, I always recommend Dr. Alex. Lots of my Expat Insiders seminar attendees have gone to him when they come down to the seminar. They just add a couple days and get their work done. So then what makes Dr. Alex so special? Well, first of all, and probably most importantly, he went to the United States to get his oral surgery degree. And for a Latino or anyone from a third world country, to get accepted into an oral surgery program in the States or any advanced medical specialty program in the States, you have to be in the top of your class. Aside from that, he speaks perfect English. And again, he got his oral surgery degree in the U.S. at a prestigious U.S. school. And guess what? After he completed the program, they didn't want him to leave. They offered him a position in that school. And guess what? He said, no, I'm going back to Guatemala because my family and friends are there. Note that it's highly unusual when a third world professional gets an advanced degree in the U.S. to be asked to stay on as a teaching professor when they graduate. Because the deal is, you see, when you're accepted in a U.S. specialty medical program, you get a student visa to the States that expires after you graduate, and you have to go home, or else every foreign doctor, after graduating in the States, would just stay in the U.S. forever, right? It's a fact. Few want to go back to their home country because they know in the States they can make 5 or 10 times as much. That's just the way things are. That's why foreigners in medical specialty programs come on student visas that expire. That means they're only allowed in the States long enough to get their advanced degree, and then they have to go back home. Though in Dr. Alex's case, they asked him to stay on permanently, which is unusual and speaks to the quality of his work. He said no, his loyalty was to his family, friends, etc., and his country. Just note, there are many physicians, dentists, specialists, the works, practicing down here in Latin America who got their advanced degrees in the States, Europe, Canada, etc. They're all over the place down here. Just check out their diplomas when you walk into their offices. You'll see. All the best and most respected docs have walls just full of diplomas. They're extremely proud of their accomplishments and what they've achieved in life, so they proudly display their diplomas. You can't miss them. Oh, and one more thing. I just mentioned that the cost of dental treatment down here is a quarter to a fifth as much as it would be up in the States. That's a huge savings, which makes most trips down here just for dentistry well worth it. You can make a vacation out of it and have the savings pay for the whole thing, with a hell of a lot left over, too. Again, I said dentistry is about a quarter to a fifth as much as it is up in the States, but only when you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail. If you're on the Gringo Tourist Trail looking to get some work done, as soon as you're in places like Costa Rica, Tulum, Cancun, or any place where a cruise ship lands, your dental work will still be a lot cheaper, probably half as much as what you'd pay in the States. But just remember, because on the tourist trail, dentists and physicians see lots of gringo. That means they've developed certain preconceived stereotypical notions about it. Like, for example, we're loaded. And they will, like many dentists and specialists up in the States, will try to oversell you on your treatment plan. You longtime listeners have heard me mention this before, but it's worth repeating. And I've heard this from dentists and physicians myself. If, for example, you go to a dentist off the Gringo Tourist Trail, I'm saying off the Gringo Tourist Trail now, you just might be his only gringo patient, or one of the small handful of gringo patients he has. The thing is, down here in Latin America, very few people have dental insurance, so dentists have no incentive to upsell you, meaning they won't look at you as Mr. Moneybags and push you into what dentists call the Cadillac treatment, because their local Latino patients just won't put up with it, won't stand for it, or just can't afford it. Here's an example. Up in the United States, for example, my sister's a dentist. Let's say you crack a tooth. She just might say, this tooth needs a crown and your insurance will pay 80% of that. Well, you schedule the appointments and you go ahead and do it. In Latin America, where almost no one has dental insurance, a person walks into the dentist's office with a cracked tooth. The dentist will say, you know, this tooth really needs a crown. Eventually, anyway. But they're expensive. He knows in his mind the patient probably can't afford a crown. So he doesn't push it because he knows the tooth is still hanging in there and he can repair it. He knows he could get a little more life out of it before it absolutely needs a crown. He's got a lot of techniques, resins, bonding, pins, posts, whatever they use. So unlike when you're at the dentist in the United States, here's how the conversation might go when you're down here in Latin America. You know this tooth? Eventually is going to need a crown. It will be expensive. That would be a permanent fix. We can go ahead and start if you like. But I know I can repair this thing to a certain degree. It might last a couple more years. Maybe you'll get a year, 2 years, even 5 years if you don't chomp down on a lot of hard things like popcorn hulls. No guarantees, of course, but let's go ahead and patch it. Now, at a dentist's office up in the States, you'll rarely hear that kind of talk. Because the dentists, and my sister tells me this all the time, know very well the insurance company will pay 80, sometimes even 90% of that procedure. So dentists up in the States might never offer that much cheaper alternative. And that's what's happened with dentists in Latin America on the gringo tourist trail, like Costa Rica, Cancun, Tulum. They know that gringos who have come all the way down to Latin America to see them in their offices, they know that gringo's already been to a couple of dentists up in the States and may even have a treatment plan in his hand when he walks into the office. They know the gringo's down in Latin America looking for dental work because he's been freaked out by the price he's been quoted from dentists up in the States. So they do want the dental work, all the best high-quality dental work, too. They've already been primed for that by their dentist up in the States. And therein lies the problem when you go to a dentist on the gringo tourist trail. The dentists have seen this gringo scenario time after time. That makes us an easy upsell. Hell, we've already been upsold by our dentist up in the States. By the time most gringos come down to Latin America for their dental work, they're looking at lots of crowns, bridges, and implants. Dentists on the gringo tourist trail also know that gringos come down with cash or can put it all on a credit card. Here's the thing. They walk through the door saying to the doc, "Look, I need lots of crowns and bridges. I've been told all that by my dentist up in the States. So go ahead. I'm all yours." Anyway, I think you get the point. You can see once again when gringos start piling in, little by little we slowly jack up the cost of living and eventually we're seen by the locals as just dollar signs. Then again, if you've got the dough, you can live anywhere you want. Some gringos like living on the tourist trail. The problem is, and I've seen it for myself, there are lots of jaded locals on the gringo tourist trail. Everyone's got their hand out for a tip and they've got a false smile to go along with it. All right, moving on. You know, we don't talk a whole lot about Brazil. Though it is a very interesting place, it's not on my top 10 lists for a plan B. You know, getting residency, starting a business there, the bureaucracy is immense. Street crime is out of control. And if you've got a legit business on the books, they tax the shit out of you. And the bureaucracy there just keeps getting thicker and stupider all the time. Is that a word, stupider? If you still think you want to visit Brazil, well, you better do it now because in exactly 1 year, on April 10th, 2025, citizens from Australia, Canada, and the U.S. will need a visa to enter the country. That means you'll have to apply for one before you go. The cost will be $80, and here's the kicker. Applicants, that means U.S. residents again, will also need to provide the following additional information according to the Brazilian government's website. You'll have to provide a letter of intent detailing the dates and purpose of the trip, as well as confirmed details of where you'll be staying. You'll have to show proof of residence in the U.S. and return tickets to and from Brazil. And here's the part that just might piss you off enough to say, screw it, I'm not going. You'll have to provide to the Brazilian government proof of income in the form of the following, it says on the Brazilian website. You'll have to submit the last three checking or savings account statements or your last six pay slips. And you'll have to show that you've had an average of at least $2,000 showing in your account, your bank account, for the last 3 months. And it says here, for those of you who don't meet those requirements, you must get a sponsor who will sign off and vouch for you, providing their finances instead. So how do you feel about that? And why do you think Brazil has slapped those contingencies on Americans, Canadians, and Australians? Well, unofficially, Brazilian bureaucrats are saying it's because the United States, Canada, and Australia punish Brazilian visitors to their countries in the same way. For example, if a Brazilian wants to visit the U.S. legally, he's got to make a visa appointment at the U.S. embassy and show he has the means to pay for the entire trip, show bank statements, a letter of intent, etc., etc. And for them to apply for a visa to visit the U.S. costs $185, non-refundable. So after hearing that, you might say they've got a point. Brazil's just doing the same thing. It's tit for tat. But here's what they're not telling you. There's always that. In the immediate past, a large percentage of Brazilian nationals who have gotten legit visas to the U.S., Canada, and Australia, guess what? They never get back on their return flight. In other words, they end up staying in the U.S., Canada, and Australia illegally. Unofficially, I've heard the numbers around 20%. In other words, for about 1 out of 5 Brazilians, the whole plan is never to come back to Brazil. The plan all along was to skip the return flight, violate their tourist visa, which is supposed to only be for 90 days, and live off the fruits of the land in U.S., Canada, or Australia forever after. That's an estimated 1 out of 5 Brazilians traveling to the U.S., Canada, and Australia. Meanwhile, when we're talking about visitors to Brazil from the U.S., Canada, and Australia, tourism in the other direction, there are almost no cases of tourists from the U.S., Canada, and Australia intentionally overstaying their visas and disappearing into the country. That's the difference. Brazilians, like most Central and South Americans, want a piece of that so-called American dream, if they can get it. And there are ways if they can get a flight into the country. Yep, that goes on. It's a problem. While gringos from the U.S., Canada, and Australia truly do visit Brazil simply as tourists and have no desire or intent to overstay their tourist visa. For me, anyway, Brazil's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. And now, even to visit there, it's getting to be a pain in the ass. By the way, Brazil had 6 million tourist arrivals in 2023. At $80 a head for a visa, that's about $500 million windfall for the government. And what do travelers and visitors get for that $80? Just more red tape. What a scam, huh? Oh, and by the way, talking about mañana time, it says here the average processing of your visa will be 5 working days. Although the company handling the applications, a company called VFS, strongly recommends you apply 2 months ahead of your travel plans. Only in Latin America does 5 days sometimes equal 2 months. Now, my take on it is this. I think it's a really stupid move by Brazil. Truthfully, poor people from the U.S., Canada, and Australia do not fly to Brazil. Think about it. I highly doubt any ghetto, white trash, or trailer court folks are hopping off to Rio for a quick vacation junket. For them, a day trip to Six Flags would be a stretch. I mean, look, the flight itself's something like 10 hours and at least $1,500. I'm not squawking about the $80 either. I'm squawking about the paperwork and the bank statements. To me, that's totally unnecessary and a completely stupid move on Brazil's part. But then again, if you're born with a monkey brain, there's always a job waiting for you in government. Then again, if you're a student of history, you could think of it this way. According to Brazilian visa requirements, the U.S. has now been categorized as a third world country. Because after all, that's what third world country citizens must do in order to obtain a visa to travel to a first world country. In other words, when you think about it, Brazil has downgraded the U.S. to what it really is, a third world country. Well done, Brazil. Still, I won't be brushing up on my Portuguese anytime soon. All right, moving on. Let's throw a little spice into the mix. You know, we talk once in a while about mating, dating, love, and romance here in Latin America. Though I don't want to make a Lonely Hearts Club out of this show. I gotta say, about a quarter of the email questions and answers I get have to do with love, mating, dating, and, well, anything and everything having to do with Latin American hookups, both male and female. I don't recognize the anything in between. That's just pure bullshit. Anyway, I've got a big stack of emails. Let's take one from Mr. Ford, F-O-R-D. Johnny, I make over $100K a year, live in a modest house, I wear the same stuff to work every day, and have more work clothes than normal clothes. I got a mid-sized truck and a dog. I'm 5'11", not ripped, but not fat either. I've never been married, no kids, never been to prison or arrested. He says, I'm 42, I'm pretty damn shy, so I don't go out often, which is my own fault, but I feel like it's a waste of time to go out. What kind of quality girls am I going to meet at a bar or club here in the U.S.? But I've been to 26 countries, and I love Latin America. I use my vacation for traveling to places I've never been. The more time I spend in the States, though, the more I don't want a date. But the more time I visit Latin America, the more I think, why didn't I go there sooner and why haven't I moved there permanently yet? Mr. Ford says, sure, they have gold diggers in Latin America like they do in the States, but on a very, very different and minor level, almost negligible on that scale altogether. Every girl wants a leg up, and Latin American girls, most of them, live in some kind of barrio or ghetto. So it doesn't take much of an economic lift at all to put a big smile on their face and make them genuinely happy to be with you. Though, he says, the caveat is, unless you're stupid enough to start buying them all kinds of things from day one and regularly taking her to non-fast food restaurants. Big mistake. If you start taking her to places she could never afford before or only could go to on her birthday, then you just might be creating a monster. And what happens after that is your fault. Ford says, Johnny, because I'm kind of a quiet, introverted guy, up in the States, I always had trouble with women. when you have that problem, you read a lot of articles and books and see a lot of YouTubes on that subject. He says, in one particular book I read called Settling for Mr. Good Enough, the author found that men were looking for just three must-have traits in a woman. Number one, she had to be reasonably attractive. Number two, she had to be warm and kind. And number three, she had to be able to carry on a good conversation. In that same book, Settling for Mr. Good Enough, the American author reported that women, on the other hand, didn't have three essential must-have traits to find a guy. They had closer to 200 must-have traits. Even on the low end, the author said, American ladies have a minimum must-have trait list of 60 different items. That's 60. He says, for women in Europe, it's exactly the same. In the United States, for example, if a guy's below 6 feet tall, he's literally invisible on the dating apps. No girl will swipe or give him a like. In Europe, it's the same. The magic number is 180 centimeters. Basically the same 6 foot cutoff for women on those dating apps in Europe. Mr. Ford says in Latin America, none of that matters at all. If you're a gringo, doesn't matter if you're 5'2", that gringo advantage of yours cuts through it all. Mr. Ford, I totally agree. And finally comes this email from Stu. He says, Johnny, I'm a male in the U.S. who's had over 70 female partners. A majority of those while I was unemployed and living in a kind of trashy apartment. So, he says, I'm a perfect example of how, no matter how much money a guy has, if a woman is bored with him, she'll probably cheat on him with a broke-ass guy like me. He says, I'm a perfect example of that. Is it like that in Latin America, too? Stu, you've had 70 female partners whilst dead broke, huh? What are you, all buffed out, look like Brad Pitt or the Marlboro Man or something? Anyway, as far as Latin American ladies cheating on their guys, well, of course, that does happen, but as for gringos and Latinas, if she cheats on you, she knows she's got a lot to lose. Because almost always, a gringo boosts his Latina girlfriend into a socioeconomic level she could almost never have achieved on her own or with a Latino boyfriend. So, in fact, it's much less likely to happen down here in Latin America, though it does sometimes. I've seen it happen and the gringo dumps her. The lady's nice, comfortable style of living gets kicked down quite a few notches. She regrets it, pays dearly, and socioeconomically almost never completely recovers.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.